well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with the Reload, Stephen Gutowski, here in just a moment or two. He was down in Dallas for the NRA's board meeting over the weekend, marathon session. We'll talk with Stephen about that. But we're also going to talk about tonight's debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. Maybe the only debate between the presidential candidates. There's no guarantee that gun control is going to be a topic of the conversation this evening, although I suspect that with the shooting in Georgia last week, we will get at least one question dealing with gun controls. We're going to talk about that with Stephen Gutowski as well here in just a second, so stay tuned for that. In fact, you know what? Why wait? Let's get to it right now. Take a look and a listen to our conversation with the Reload, Stephen Gutowski. Stephen, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's good to see you, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I want to talk about your weekend trip to Dallas here in just a couple minutes. But, of course, big topic of conversation, the debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, maybe the only presidential debate we see between now and November. I would not be surprised if that was the case. And as I said in your introduction, there's no guarantee that we're actually going to get a gun control question, right? In fact, we didn't get one during the first debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden back when Biden was the Democratic candidate. We have had a high profile shooting in the past few days in Georgia. So maybe that ups the odds of having a question asked. But let me start with you. I mean, what question would you like to see posed to the candidates tonight dealing with the Second Amendment?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I'd like to hear more detail from them on exactly what they would do in a second or in a term, in their term, potentially second term for Trump, first term for Kamala Harris. But, you know, it's just not something that we've seen a lot of detail on from either of these candidates in any of their public statements. You know, Kamala Harris repeats the same three policy positions that Joe Biden was holding going into the race. Obviously, more detail on why her campaign has walked back her position on mandatory buybacks of AR-15s and other similar firearms would be ideal, because her campaign said that, but they didn't give any detail as to why or whether she might, for instance, sign a bill that had that proposal in it, right? They haven't gotten anything like that. Just said she wouldn't push for it anymore. She had campaigned on that significantly in 2019 before she dropped out of that race. And then you know, obviously on the other side you have former President Trump, who has been pretty quiet on the issue as of late, at least since the RNC. And you know, I don't know that he's detailed any specific policies. I think the closest you've gotten is earlier in the race, he would like in his NRA speeches, he promised to undo a lot of the executive actions that Biden has done. So that's something concrete, you know, pretty mild, I would say, in terms of policy proposals. So is he going to push for things like the Hearing Protection Act, which would deregulate suppressors, or national reciprocity for concealed carry permits? These are top priorities for the gun rights movement and have been for a long time. Are these things he's going to make a priority if he wins? You know, as if we're talking about policy, there's obviously lots of other stuff going on in this race beyond guns and what have you, but that's what I'd like to see more detail.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, Kamala Harris released this was a new path forward or new way forward, which was supposed to be, you know, okay, here are my policy positions. Apparently, not only did her team just steal this from the Biden campaign, right? Because the metadata shows, in fact, I think even the website itself said at one point something about reelecting Joe Biden. So they just basically cut and pasted this, right?
Just like they did with the platform. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's not only is there not a lot of detail, but there's literally nothing new about what is in that document. And as you say, you know, she talks about support for a assault weapons ban, as well as universal background checks, red flag laws. But she doesn't define what that assault weapons ban, quote unquote, actually looks like. And as you know, you, I, and our audience knows, look, that's a made up phrase, right? There is no definition of assault weapon, at least no single definition. California has revised their definition, what, four different times since the 1980s? Yep. But yeah, the definition of an assault weapon, according to Dianne Feinstein, is different from an assault weapon, according to Martin Heinrich, who's the author of that Go Safe Act, which would basically ban all gas operated semi-automatic firearms. Mm-hmm. So there are some, I think, legitimate questions about, okay, what does that mean when you say you want to ban so-called assault weapons? And then there's the how do you do it? And then there's the what are the consequences, right? And then there's the why did you reverse course from what you said 5 years ago when you said it was a good idea to have this mandatory quote-unquote buyback? And I don't think it's, I don't think I'm breaking any new ground here when I say I think it's pretty obvious that the Harris campaign wants to avoid specificity.
Sure.
They don't want to get into the granular details of these things, right? They want to run basically a bumper sticker campaign between now and November, because you delve into the details and all of a sudden these things that, you know, might poll at 60% and the support drops to 50, 45, 40%.
Yeah. And you know, that's not an uncommon thing to do as politicians. That's how Obama won a large victory in his first race. Hope and change, right, was the slogan, not detailed policy proposals. So it seems like that's what she's more aiming for here. But yeah, I mean, these are, if you're a journalist asking questions at a debate, you want to get people information. And so, yeah, the detail, please. We'd like to hear more on this. I mean, she says, no, excuse me. She says she wouldn't push for, or her campaign says, she hasn't actually said it, but her campaign has said that she wouldn't push for the mandatory buyback, but they've kept essentially the Biden campaign's approach. And Biden himself, while he was a bit to the right of Kamala in 2019 on these issues, right, he called her out for it at one debate, right, said that we have to follow the Constitution. But even he, his proposal at times would, you know, require people to register their AR-15s that they previously owned to be able to keep them under the National Firearms Act, similar to what he did with pistol braces in his ATF rule. So, you know, is she on board with that? That's a pretty severe policy as well that would affect millions upon millions of American gun owners. But, you know, we don't know exactly. And the red flag law, I guess, is that a national law that she wants administered by the federal court system, or is she proposing some sort of requirement for states to adopt it? Like, what, how exactly would that work? And then obviously same thing with universal background checks. Is it Manchin Toomey proposal, or is it something more strict than that? And yeah, you're right. Assault weapons ban, even, what definition are you using? Because the 94 definition is out of favor now in the gun control groups. And instead of allowing two features, most of them now only allow one feature and then have a bunch of additional requirements. Like Massachusetts has their copycat policy, which is sort of like anything the attorney general thinks is like a banned gun is now banned. You know, so there's a lot of devil in those details.
There is. All right. So, you know, the other thing that I'm curious to see if Trump brings up tonight, because I doubt it's going to be brought up by the moderator, and it's certainly not going to be brought up by Kamala Harris herself. Beyond those policy positions that we talked about, there's also Kamala Harris's history. Right. So in 2008, when she was the district attorney in San Francisco, she helped co-author a brief arguing in support of D.C.'s handgun ban. Right. Arguing that the Second Amendment had never been interpreted to protect an individual right to keep and bear arms. So I don't know if she's ever walked that back. After Bruin, she called the decision. She said it defies common sense in the Constitution. I'd still like to just delve into that. But,
sure.
You know, do you think that we'll see Donald Trump actually bring up some of her past comments if gun control is a topic during tonight's debate?
I doubt it. I don't know that he would go that specific. Everything he's, when he's attacked Kamala Harris on guns, it's just been about her wanting to take people's guns and about how people need guns to protect themselves. It's been a pretty base level critique. So I don't know if he'll go to any specific comments. I mean, you could also bring up micro stamping. She was the one who set that in motion in California that effectively banned modern handguns over the last decade or so until it was enjoined by a court. later on as unconstitutional after Bruin. So, you know, there's a lot of things you could specifically point to, not just in what she has said as a candidate for president, but especially in 2019, but also like her actual policy record, like things she's done as attorney general or senator or what have you. But, you know, and honestly, Trump's predisposition to this point has been not to talk about this issue much at all. Mm-hmm. He hasn't wanted to highlight this. He seems to genuinely believe that gun owners don't vote. At this point, he keeps mentioning that. And, you know, his campaign co-chair, Chris Lacivita, has mentioned it as well. And so I don't know, it doesn't seem like Trump and the Trump campaign have thought this was a top priority that they should focus on. They're much more interested in the economy or immigration or what have you, when Trump is on message, which he's often not, obviously. So, you know, I don't know, he could bring it up. Obviously, it's a weakness that he could exploit. I just don't know. I haven't seen him do anything to that level of specificity. He's mainly just uses broad level attacks.
Yeah. And, you know, and it is interesting that you're right. I mean, he has said several times that, you know, gun owners don't vote as much as they should. Obviously, there are, you know, gun owners out there who are not registered to vote. But my impression is that actually gun owners are fairly reliable votes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, certainly I think the common perspective, the common point of view on this is that gun owners are a highly motivated faction of voters who will vote on that issue in particular. And you can look to things like ballot initiatives for proof of that, where policies that poll really well, take universal background checks, for instance. So you could look at the main ballot initiative in 2016 and see that that policy polls in the high 80% normally. But when you get the detailed position on a ballot, it failed in Maine. It actually, despite being outspent, the opposition prevailed. It defeated the universal background check ballot initiative there. And even if you look at more recent, you could look at the Iowa ballot initiative, or you could look at the Oregon one and see that in a deep blue state like Oregon, they passed their gun control ballot initiative, but only by the slimmest of margins. It was like 1%, right?
Yeah, 50.1%.
Right. And so, and then in Iowa, it was, they had a pro-gun ballot initiative at the same time, and it passed overwhelmingly.
66%, yeah.
Right. And that's usually where people look, or that's usually pretty good evidence that people actually do vote on this particular issue. And that's maybe one reason why Trump, while he has gone a lot further in moving positions on abortion, he hasn't actually done that on guns to this point. They've taken this sort of quiet approach, but he hasn't changed policies mm-hmm. to this point. And I think, look, there's a number of questions you could ask him if you're a pro-gun person. There's things that you'd like to see him answer. I mean, he's a convicted felon, can't own guns legally right now. Obviously, he has a lot of legal fights ongoing. He has, you know, he implemented the bump stock ban, which was found unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. There's a lot that you could also want to hear from him. Some of his rhetoric about being a dictator for a day, and I know people can chalk that up to a joke, but he uses the kind of rhetoric, violent rhetoric, and praises authoritarian leaders. And these are things that usually would make a lot of pro-gun people uncomfortable and unhappy. And he could address that stuff as well and try to alleviate some concerns there. Obviously, we mostly talk about Harris because, in contrast, and I think he probably gets this and why he can go out and say gun owners don't vote. I don't need to emphasize this issue because look at who I'm running against. And that's a fair point. But there are these things that he can, yeah, I'd like to see him address as well directly.
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote about this, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, his embrace of stop and frisk in Chicago, right? And, you know, just stop people, get the guns. Hey, you know, I have issues with stop and frisk, not only with the effectiveness of the policy, but with the constitutionality of the policy. I don't believe that simply carrying a gun should be probable cause that you are doing anything wrong. So there are some issues that I think that, you know, Trump could either reassure his base or at least, you know, kind of get into some of these details. I don't know that, as you say, I don't know that he's going to get into the granular details tonight, any more than Harris is, quite frankly. Right. I think this is going to be an attempt by both candidates to try to stay at 50,000 feet, right, rather than, you know, get down and dirty and talk about these specifics. But I guess we will see. Do you want to place a bet on whether or not we get a gun control question? Just a friendly gentleman's wager? You think we will?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to bet against me, that's, I'm happy to take that. Because, I mean, it's just, look, you know, the Georgia school shooting was a terrible event. And it's going to drive coverage of this issue, because that's how media coverage tends to work around guns, is that these kind of high profile mass shootings are what brings attention to the issue on a national level. You know, there's we can argue about whether that's a good way to cover guns in America, or if it should be a lot more holistic. Obviously, that's part of the reason I founded The Reload, and what you do at Bearing Arms obviously goes well beyond just covering mass shootings. But in terms of mass media, that's often the case. And so I think it would be very odd if they didn't ask some gun related question at this debate after you had four people murdered in a school shooting.
Well, and you had the assassination attempt against Donald Trump.
Yep.
You know, we have not seen a debate since then either. So I suspect you're right. I will not take this bet. I think you and I are both on the same side there. But we will see. And I'm always open to being wrong, because I've been.
You never know.
You never know. I expected we'd see something in the first debate, and it never came up. So I guess we'll see what happens tonight. But before we let you go, I also want to ask you, you were down in Dallas for the NRA's board meeting this past weekend, 12-hour marathon executive session.
Yeah.
Did you bring a book to read since you were not allowed in the room?
You know, there were a couple other NRA members there that I was able to talk with for a little while that stuck it out for a good amount of time. And so that was good company to have, but otherwise, and I watched the Phillies get rocked, actually, that was unfortunate, but they're doing well. They're doing great, actually, but that day was not good. So yeah, it was a lot of sitting around a hotel lobby for 15 hours, because the executive session was 12 hours. The whole meeting was like 15 hours. So it was wild. It was the longest one I've ever seen. I've been to a bunch of these things, right? And it was the longest one I've ever been to. And unfortunately, I think, you know, as far as news goes, not a ton. I extended my stay to make sure I'd be there all the way to midnight. And then just not a lot of news came out of it. There were two things, two major things. One is that the Special Litigation Committee that oversees this New York civil case that they're dealing with, the tail end of that, which also it has control over their lawyer, Bill Brewer, who's been a controversial figure among especially NRA reformers. Those stayed in place. The SLC, a lot of reformers on the board wanted to get rid of it. They wanted to, I think, get rid of Brewer as an extension, and they weren't able to do that, it seems. I don't have the exact details. The impression I got was there was some procedural maneuvering that made the vote a higher threshold than what the reformers could come up with, even though they may have had a majority of support to disband the SLC and fire Brewer, or end the relationship with Brewer, however you want to say it. But they weren't able to actually get that done. And then they voted on a proposal to send back the judge, because right now you had the ruling, no court-appointed monitor, right? But the judge said, okay, you're not going to get a monitor, but I want you to do these series of reforms. And they are more than just suggestions, if you read his words. Mm-hmm. They seem like something he wants to turn into a consent decree that the NRA will have to abide by as part of essentially sort of like a settlement with the AG's office. And the NRA board voted on what to send to the judge. And we'll see if it's in line with what the judge wants, because he wants some pretty significant changes, you know, like shrinking the size of the board, opening up the nominating process to more people to get on the ballot for the board, which has been a notoriously difficult thing to do in the past. And, you know, protecting the chief compliance officer. You know, there's a number of things he wants to see done that it's not clear the NRA is willing to offer to do. And I don't know how that's going to play out when it gets back to the judge.
What's the latest on the on that case? I know that they were supposed to meet in conference last month, and everything was kind of looked like it'd be working towards a September resolution. When do they go back before the judge?
Actually, this week, I believe they're supposed to send their proposal in. So, you know, they went back. There was a couple letters sent. So the judge said, hey, here are the basic ideas that I want you guys to implement. And AG's office and NRA's lawyers, you guys get together and come up with the details of these things. Like what, how, you know, shrinking the board, sure, but how you do that, opening up the ballot access, okay, but for how long and how many people, what's the process going to be? That sort of thing the judge did not lay out in his order. He wanted them to figure it out, to come together and try to come up with a proposal that they could both agree with. And they haven't been able to do that so far because there have been letters back and forth from the NRA's lawyers, the Brewer firm, and the AG's office that are in the docket that you can read. And so the last one said from the Brewer firm, they said, you know, we still don't have a deal with the AG. We're going to take what we want to propose to the board and have get them to give their input and approval. And then we're going to, by the end of, I believe this week, they should send that to the AG and send it to the judge. And I think if there's still a dispute, then I believe the judge is going to have to resolve it.
Okay. All right. Well, Stephen, we definitely appreciate the reporting from the marathon session there. Sorry the Phillies lost that night, but
they won last night, so it's okay.
Well, there you go. You know, there's always another day in baseball. And if not, there's always next spring. So anyway, always appreciate you joining us on the program as well. Make sure you check out thereload.com for fantastic Second Amendment analysis and reporting. Always enjoy our time together, Stephen. So thank you again for coming on the show today. It's good to see you, sir.
Absolutely.
My thanks to Steve for joining us on the program today. Looking forward to having him back again in the very near future. All right, before we get to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just 1 second. Economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder that central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. Now, if you haven't thought about gold yet, it's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLD into 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLD into 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. Now let's turn our attention to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Start there with a case out of Georgia. 2 months after getting paroled, an Augusta, Georgia man wanted for a woman's murder. He is in custody now, taken into custody over the weekend. But yeah, just a few months after he was released from prison, this suspect is now back behind bars. 26-year-old Devontae Parks was wanted and is believed to be responsible for the shooting death of 27-year-old Laquana Lang. Happened over the weekend. She was shot Saturday morning in Augusta. Victim pronounced dead about 11 o'clock Monday morning. According to a Facebook post, Parks and Lang had been in a relationship since earlier this summer. According to local media, Park pleaded guilty in 2016 to shooting another woman that he was dating. He was 18 years old at the time when he repeatedly shot a woman in Richmond County. Shot five times, as a matter of fact. But Parks, again, after taking a guilty plea, was sentenced to 12 years in prison, 13 years of probation. He only ended up serving 8 years in prison before he was paroled on July 26th of this year. As part of the conditions of his parole, he was supposed to live with his mom. He was supposed to find employment, wasn't supposed to have any contact with Augusta street gangs. He was supposed to pay $30 a month to a victim's compensation fund and was ordered to stay away from the victim, who he had shot 8 years earlier. I don't know if he abided by all the terms of the probation, but again, according to authorities, he is now responsible, or at least believed to be responsible, for the murder of his new girlfriend. Today's armed citizen story from Indiana, Daviess County, Indiana, where a man was shot in self-defense during an armed confrontation between two complete strangers, according to authorities. This is a weird story. Thankfully, again, the individual who was threatened was able to protect themselves. This was on Labor Day, about 8:15 at night. Daviess County Central Dispatch got a report from a homeowner regarding a situation between her husband and a man who had shown up
on their driveway. WBIW reports that the homeowner, David Goebel, and the other man, Kevin Wilson, were both armed. According to authorities, Kevin Wilson, who's 59 years old, showed up at the Goebel property, with a gun, started an argument. There were multiple warnings from Goebel to leave the property. But when Wilson started walking towards the porch while he was holding a gun and pointing it at the homeowner, that is when Goebel fired two shots, which caused Wilson to run to his vehicle, where he later passed away from his injuries. According to WBIW, officials say that Wilson had a history of mental health issues. There was no prior relationship between the two men, so it's unknown why he showed up at the Goebel home. The investigation is still ongoing. Davis County Prosecutor's Office will review the final report. But again, the local police there, including the Davis County Sheriff's Department, says that Mr. Goebel was acting in self-defense when he shot and killed the stranger, pointing a gun at him on his doorstep. We'll keep our eyes open for any more details and follow-ups if and when they become available. Finally today, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a group of individuals in Maine who saved a stranger who had suffered a broken neck. I mean, this could have been a really terrible situation, and instead, it's one of those situations where, you know, the goodness of others is on full display. Bill Copeland, he's 75 years old. Every Labor Day, he goes to the Rockland Breakwater Lighthouse. And he said this Labor Day, he was walking out towards the breakwater. He says it wasn't quite halfway back. And he said he tripped and he fell. He said, I was in a lot of pain. Most pain I've ever been in, he thinks. Ended up breaking his neck. He needed 9 stitches in his head. And as he's laying there on the ground, obviously unable to move, there were some strangers in the area who came to his aid. One of them was the fire chief in Brunswick, Maine, Ken Brilliant. He was there with his wife visiting the lighthouse. And he noticed at that point a group of Good Samaritans who were already helping Copeland. So he went over there, identified himself as a paramedic, and said that he was able to help assist in the care. He says, you know, I've always felt whether on duty or off, if I saw someone in need of help, I'd stop and offer assistance. He said it was the way I was brought up and how I was trained as an EMT. Copeland says there was one individual in particular who really stood out to him. He said, the guy that held my neck, he said he didn't want me to move it. I was bleeding quite a lot up there. He had a dog, and he laid right there. He said, the dog is very concerned. Everybody's really concerned, including Copeland's daughter, Janet Mayhew, who got the call that her father was at a local hospital. She said she immediately thought it was a scam, but then realized, oh, no, they were serious. She said when she got to the hospital, she said, I just want to thank the man that helped him. She went on Facebook to try to identify him. She said, within 3 hours, I found out who the guy with the dog was. She said, I just want him to know that what he did mattered. And as WABI-TV reports, Copeland is probably going to thank these strangers once he's back on his feet. He is known as the Cookie Man of Madison for his cookies. He said it started out as a therapeutic exercise 21 years ago, and now it is just a tradition that he carries on. He says, I make blueberry cake and cookies, and I just give them to different people. Makes everybody smile. That's what I like. He says, I'd like to give some cookies to that guy who helped me out there in the breakwater. I'm guessing that that individual will be more than happy to get some of Mr. Copeland's cookies. Copeland, a Vietnam War veteran, also a woodworker who makes homemade toothpick holders to veterans that he meets. But he says that despite the injuries that he's received and the road to recovery, he is grateful for the compassion that was shown to him by strangers on Labor Day. He says there's guardian angels out there everywhere, and everybody else is proof of it. His daughter said, I definitely want to meet this man. I hope he's a hugger because I want to hug him. Well, again, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save a Vietnam veteran in need. All of those Good Samaritans there in Maine helping out the Cookie Man of Madison. And hopefully he will soon be back in the kitchen and baking treats for the strangers that could use a smile in their life. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. We will be covering the debate tonight. Again, no guarantees they're going to talk about gun control, but if they do, we will be talking about it at Bearing Arms. Don't forget to check out the website throughout the course of the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, legislation, litigation, regulation, and of course, the cultural attacks on our right to keep and bear arms as well. It's all there at Bearing Arms. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Just use the promo code SAVEAMERICA and you can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You'll get exclusive content, you'll get an ad-free experience, but you'll also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing and bearing arms. In this day and age of big tech censorship and rampant media bias, your support is more important than ever before, so thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.